CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, rise and shine, you sexy motherfuckers. It's time to get the day off to a good start, and we're going to help you do that. We're going to shake off that weekend leftover feeling. That, oh no, it's Monday bullshit. We're not going to tolerate any of that this morning. We are not standing for it. We have a busy week ahead of us. Things to do, people to see, places to go, and a whole new month to do it in. Yeah. So, got Leanne here, we got Bulelo here, we got me, we got you. What more could we want? All right, let's get cracking. So, morning, everybody. And first up, how was the weekend? Anything exciting happen? Anything fun go down? Bulelo says he ate at a place where he's very, very happy to go back again and again and again. He told me that just before we started the show, he was boasting about how he keeps going to these really awesome Joburg eateries. And he's going to admit now, which very few people who've lived in Cape Town and Johannesburg will admit, he's about to admit that he thinks Joburg has actually got some secret places which are better than Cape Town.
Because I'm such a conservative person, the tide is turning. I would prefer to say the tide is turning.
Okay.
I'm not ready to jump in. Yeah, I've got commitment issues being a perennial bachelor. So the tide is certainly turning.
Yes.
So yeah, I went in and, what a slam dunk of a place. Just a slam dunk.
He's not going to.
Are we going to say details?
No, because if he tells us, then everyone goes there and it ruins.
Then everyone will know.
Yeah. So I've forbidden him to talk about it. But I mean, what we could do is over the course of the next few weeks is we all list like one or two places that we really like, and then it all gets jumbled up and people don't know which one we're talking about when we speak about this particular one of Mbulelo's. But I went out for dinner on Wednesday last week, and I chose a place that was just convenient and easy for me and for her, and we ended up having a very nice dinner there. But if you don't put in a lot of thought, it's taxing to think of where to go, you know?
Yeah.
If you don't sit down and like write down the options, and I hate indecisiveness. So I just rather choose a place and then we end up there. That's kind of the idea.
But also it's quite difficult, you know, the vibe at different places we haven't assessed it in a while.
I have.
You know, a lot of the times it has to be the vibe.
Well, I hear you.
You think back to something that was open, and then you think, well, I don't know what it's like now.
You're not sure if it's still open or not. That's also a problem. You have to look it up you have to Google it, and then it says it's either closed or temporarily closed, and you shed a little tear for the place because you think it was, you know, fun while it lasted. I went out on Saturday with Ben, watched the rugby and a couple of other friends. And had a very nice time. Place called The Wild Side in Craig Hall, which I hadn't been to before. It was quite fun.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I mean, Ben will tell you, he took a picture of me when the final whistle blew and everyone was going crazy in the place. And I was just sitting there like looking at the screen because,
well, you know what?
I don't know what that excitement feels like. I've never felt like that before.
You didn't know if you were at a hockey match or a basketball match.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the same for me. I was outside in my garden and I heard a group of about 15 people, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
In a house somewhere just screaming for joy. And I immediately Googled what sport is on today.
That's pathetic. You know, we're such bad South Africans. Like everyone else in the country is really excited about the Springboks beating the All Blacks because it's quite a big deal. It really is. And especially because, you know, whenever that happens, we have like this instant high. It's like the whole of South Africa takes drugs and we're happy for a couple of hours. And obviously it all comes down again afterwards. But I had a fun weekend all round. I was busy. I had a friend out from America on Friday. So I got to see him. And then on
America.
America. He was telling me like flying was horrible because.
Is he a Moroccan?
No, he had to go for a COVID test 24 hours before, and then they wouldn't accept that test, so he had to go for another one at the airport. And he said it's just, you know, it's a lot of money eventually. And then he hopped on the plane, got here, and he was pretty jet lagged. But anyway, we had a nice catch up. So it wasn't a biggie. But then on Saturday, I went to watch the rugby with Ben. I had dinner on Saturday night with another group of friends. And then on Sunday, yesterday, I went to the show jumping South African Derby, which is always fun. And I've been going to that for years, and it's just such a nice crowd of people. And you kind of know everybody there, and you know some of the people.
Do people in the crowd still go when the horse is about to jump?
Absolutely, especially the riders. So all the other show jumpers go as they get close to the, you know, the various jumps. But it was lots of fun, and I knew some of the people who were participating, and that was always, you know, that makes it more interesting. But just a good day out, and not like a raucous, you know, crazy party like usual. You know, the usual ones I anticipate when I go there, because it's always on a Sunday, and I used to actually like think about whether or not I needed to take the Monday off work, because they were that hectic, and I never did, but it was on my mind, you know. And yesterday was quite civilized. I mean, had lunch and, you know, just like a glass or two of wine, and it was very relaxed and sophisticated and not the usual, you know, craziness. And I enjoyed it. I really did. It's actually quite fun.
Sounds good.
Yes. And what's been going on with you, Ass? Have you been out of the house at all, or are you still stuck in there like a cat lady?
No. No, I've been out and about, but the thing is, at the moment, I'm just really focused on work.
Oh, okay. Working hard.
It's okay, Emma Bulelio, you know. If you want to laugh, it's fine. Don't be ashamed.
Yeah.
Like a cat.
I've been doing a lot of work, but also, yeah, as I mentioned, I'm in the market for new jobs. So, yeah, I've been doing a lot of research. I've had to get back into the news vibe, which has been quite interesting. So I'm researching all sorts of things like, you know, current affairs like the Zondo Commission and where Zuma is in his trial. And
suddenly you've had to become a journo again.
Yeah, even though I've been exposed to all of this, and you know, we touch on it every now and then, I'm starting to get into the detail of these things again. And I forget that for 16 years of my life, it was so close to my heart, and what I had to do every day was be on top of news items.
Okay.
So I'm starting to get into that again. So that's bringing about a lot of research and watching videos and looking through archives, which has been quite fun.
Absolutely. Well, you've got quite a lot of archives to look through, and you've got lots to be kind of proud of as a journo, because you did that for a while. It's nice to do. Well, I mean, altogether, a really good weekend. I also felt fantastic because I bumped into a distant family member at the derby yesterday who's gone on. Good God, are you taking a piss, or is that pouring a glass of a hell of a?
That's one of the horses from the derby. Jesus.
Sounded like, I promise. Jesus, like a racehorse.
It's definitely water.
So this distant relative of mine who I've known him, I've known his kids. His kids and I grew up together, and you know, he and my mom and dad know each other quite well. Anyway, he's gone on to become a very successful breeder of horses, and he's probably approaching 70, certainly late 60s now. And he looks really good. He looks like a movie star, first of all. And he's married, I think, for the third time, or I'm not even sure. It could even be the fourth. And he showed me a picture on his phone. He's like, "Kom kyk gou hierso." So I was like, yeah, all right. So I go look at this picture on his phone, and it's these two very cute little kids, probably about, I don't know, 4 and 8 or 6 and 7 or somewhere around there. And I said, "Wow, are those your daughter's kids?" And he's like, "No, those are mine. They're my youngest."
Oh.
And I was like, awesome. Oh, what a fucking, what a hero. So I said to him, "Come on." I said to him, "Really?" He's like, "Best thing that's ever happened to me." He said, "You cannot believe." And he's looking happy. He's looking healthy. He's obviously successful. And the guy is living a great life. I mean, really, he's in good shape. You know, if I could look
so
like...
He's got a younger wife, in other words.
Let me tell you something. This is the cure to getting old for men. If you're a man and you're feeling old, dump your current wife, find a younger one, have some little children who will keep you alive and awake, and you've got to force yourself to kind of to man up and be. That's my plan. That's my plan. I've now decided, having seen him, I was like, this is good. This is a way to go.
I've been picking up on this vibe from you and from Ben.
I'm so into this now. You have no idea. This is my plan.
It's interesting from just to bring out the other side of it. If I were still married from my first marriage, I'd now be the wife who was being dumped.
Yes.
Because I'm just past childbearing age.
Yes, barren.
In fact, I could actually still have children if I wanted to.
No. We've decided. Remember, we made this decision.
you decided, but let me be honest with you. I still could because everything still works, right?
I mean, your child might not come out as right as like a kid of a 35-year-old.
It may not. It may not. And also,
anyway.
Oh my God, that's so on PC. But I've also been the woman who older men have left their spouses or wives for.
You've experienced
as the younger one.
You've experienced both sides of this equation. And what's your rationale afterwards?
Obviously it's amazing for the older man when he finds someone new. And I mean, I enjoyed that relationship thoroughly. Mm-hmm. Look, I wasn't a homewrecker and, you know, it was with the man's choice to leave, etc.
I like that. I like how
it's not her fault.
You didn't wreck the home. No. I mean, the home did get wrecked, but you weren't the home wrecker. I like that.
But she wasn't in the relationship. She wasn't the one who had to decide this, right?
So he just decided to wreck his home for you. So it's got nothing to do with you.
Right.
That's fair. And that's fair, by the way, Leanne. I've always looked at it that way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you.
But I need to give you a little bit of news, and that's as soon as a man hits about 50, all of that virility starts disappearing, right? You get a lot of the female hormone estrogen starting to produce, and less testosterone. The man definitely starts changing, and as a younger woman, I couldn't deal with the older man anymore, not being able to keep it up in the bedroom and not having this wild sexual side, which I was experiencing in my late 30s.
Well, so you haven't been
it
listening.
It might not last as long as you think.
Your man wasn't listening to the T-Health show, which is one of our Clip Central shows. You got to listen to Dr. Mark. He can help you with all this stuff. Look, I'm not saying it's going to be a bed of roses, okay? And every man is different. And maybe, just maybe, I get to that age and I go, no, actually, I kind of like staying on my own. And some people do. We've discussed this on the show a lot, you know, how some people are just happier. Bulelo's like enjoying bachelorhood. And you can do that. But I think there's – so I met one of my friend's little kids who's 6 months old. It's the first time I met her. And she's a beautiful little baby. And I was carrying around this child and kind of pushing the pram and like being a little bit paternal yesterday, which was kind of nice. Now, I'm not saying that I've suddenly got this urgent desire to have children, but when and if I do, I'd like to keep my options open. It's very different for women. And this is the unfair thing about being a woman is that if you do want to have kids, there's a certain window period. And unless you freeze some eggs or whatever, it's going to be tough.
Or adopt,
but beyond a certain age, it's going to be tough, right? For a guy, it might not be as difficult because, you know, they're a very old, very lizardy, very, you know, very creepy old men who've had kids way into their like 70s and 80s. And I don't know if that's great for the kids. I certainly don't think it's ideal, but I think you can, you've got a little bit more play if you're a guy than if you're a girl. So who knows? Anyway, I thought it was quite inspiring because this guy's he's the kind of 70 you kind of want to be. If you're going to get there and you want to be healthy and happy and you want to have, you know, really interesting stuff going on in your life from a relationship point of view, from a kid's point of view, from a work point of view, And he's certainly keeping himself interested in living, which I think is massively important. You don't want to be one of those retirees who's like retired too early and you don't have much going on, because then you start to slide down very quickly. That's what I think.
Yeah. So, Leanne, when you were the younger woman who did not wreck the home, although the home got wrecked, I mean, we need to be very clear about that.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? Does the younger girl ever think, oh, okay, it'll never happen to me? Like, what were you thinking? Were you thinking the money?
What never happened to me?
That you'll be dumped.
Sorry. Like, will I ever be replaced? Because every hot girl thinks they're the hottest person in the world, by the way. And, you know, like, people move on. But were you thinking, okay, it'll never happen to me. Oh, my God, this guy's so rich. This is going to be unbelievable.
No, what was interesting is that in the end, what wrecked the relationship, besides horrible physical abuse and emotional abuse, and hospital stints, was that this person had it was almost like a Charles and Camilla thing. They had this lifelong obsession with a married woman who would never leave her husband, but yet also had an obsession with him, who was much older than me and as ugly as a horse that had been run over by a train.
So that's complicated.
It was literally,
completely. Wow.
It was this weird obsession with, I mean, you look at Charles and Diana and you think of, you know, he had everything and she was so beautiful, but he had this lifelong love for another woman who just, you know, if you looked at them on paper, was completely different.
Right. Hey, I just want to bring Caleb on. He's joining. Where in the world are you at the moment, Caleb?
I'm in Kurdistan.
Kurdistan. I'm in Kurdistan. Oh, my God. What a place.
Can't wait to chat with Dr. Hanan when he jumps on.
Are you going to be joining us for that? That sounds good.
Yeah.
Tell us in the meantime what your problem is. Tell us so we can all think about it for a little bit.
So I've been living with what they call manic bipolar disorder.
Oh, my God. I'm just going to put you on hold. I don't want to talk to you. All right.
Or maybe we should ask him now and then maybe ask the other personality in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, let's talk to are we on the good Caleb or the slightly more dangerous Caleb right at the moment?
I think we're okay. I think today, this week has been a good week.
All right. I'm looking forward to this. I just wanted to bring you on so we could throw forward to it a little bit later on. Nice.
All right. That's cool.
Stick around, my man. There's Caleb Mutombwa. He's joining us from Kurdistan. You see, we can really help people in all corners.
What a place.
I know. But we've spoken to him about it before. All right. So we Leanne, that is the most complicated situation that you just described now. But I wonder how many people have these very complicated relationships in their lives. You know, I met someone probably about 2-3 years ago and she was convinced that she was in an open relationship. But I don't think I don't think her partner was. For her it seemed like an open relationship. I don't think he was of the same opinion. And I think
you know both people?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay, so he was uncomfortable with it.
Yes, so I just shut my mouth and didn't get involved, obviously, because I didn't want to be, some kind of mediator in that situation. But there are people who are, and again, thank God for it. We're all into different things, right? I mean, this guy you're talking about with a much older, unavailable married woman who wasn't particularly attractive. There's something about some people that turns on other people, and it's not always obvious, you know.
Yeah,
we think it's obvious. Some girls and some guys are turned on by some very peculiar things, and who's to reason? There's no reason. Sometimes it doesn't make sense.
And someone else's wife is always better than your wife, you know, like because you don't know the full sort of idiosyncratic spectrum. You know, you always put down your own partner. Someone else's wife in your mind is always better than some. Mm. But meantime, when you step into the cauldron and figure her out.
I always think that they're these people who don't realize that they are they're lucky to be with the person they're with. They somehow.
Absolutely.
They sometimes think, oh, I could do so much better, but really they can't, and they've lucked out, and they should just be very happy with who they got. I mean, there are a few people I can think of just off the top of my head who certainly I'm not going to name, because it would be the end of my friendship with them. But I look at them sometimes, I go, dude, you've lucked out with that girl. Or vice versa, I could say to her, you know, sheesh, you with the way you look and the way he looks, you've done well. You know, that kind of thing. But that's obviously superficial. And even in terms of personality, if you get down on the personalities and you kind of work out that one person is absolutely fantastic, they're brilliant, they're fun, they've got a great sense of humor, they're full of energy, they're positive, they're interesting, successful, optimistic, all of that stuff. And then, you know, the other partner is just this downer. And you're like, wow, how did those two end up together?
Yeah, but also one thing dudes need to learn, and I'm learning this as I get older, all of the great ones are taken. Like stop thinking, yes, I met this incredible chick, and she was this. Like, no dude is letting go of great. So forget about looking for great and thinking, oh, she looks incredibly hot. The rest of it will be great. If she was great, she'd be taken. It's just how it works.
No, I beg to differ. If you think about how COVID changed car markets, and we can ask George Meany, that is, how it was still kept alive because people were selling cars because they could no longer afford them, and were buying other people's cars who they could no longer afford. You've got, if you're talking specifically about women, there are lives changing all the time. They might realize that they're in the wrong type of relationship, and and there will be an amazing woman who becomes available she's made different choices in her life.
And maybe she was stuck in lockdown with her asshole boyfriend or husband, and she was like, I don't need this in my life. It's time for me to move on.
Maybe, but I just think if something's great, you move heaven and earth to keep it. And I find it difficult to believe because great is so rare. And I'm talking about physical and personality type.
I want to bring up a conversation that I had over the weekend. There's this interesting phenomenon taking place now where a lot of, you know, it used to be that a woman who had a child from a previous relationship was considered to have baggage and not necessarily be as desirable. I think that's changing a lot. I think there are a lot of women who are managing pretty well as single moms, you know, and that's obviously very challenging, but they're doing a really good job. They're doing the best job they can, and they are not carrying baggage and bitterness and issues with them. And they're actually fun to be around, and they might be looking for another relationship. And it's much easier for them now. There isn't that stigma that there was before that, you know, a woman had a kid, for example. I certainly see that with a lot of my friends. They're happy to be, you know, the stepdad or to go out on a couple of dates with a girl who before they would have said, oh, no, but she's got a kid. I don't know if I want to deal with that. That's become much less of an issue now. Or am I just imagining?
They're better men than me.
No, it's because your standards have changed because you're older and the pool is becoming smaller, and that's the reality of life, that statistically there are going to be more women in your age group who, and when I say your age group, I mean between the ages of 20 and 40 or 35 or 30, who have children.
I don't know.
My generation, interestingly, is less people are having kids now. It's not the generation before me, kids was like a thing, single mom. But in my generation, even post-divorce, because people are getting divorced now at 35, it's just happening, 50% of marriages. But it's been really interesting to see how few people have kids. They come out of the divorce. No kids. I'm ready to rock and roll or whatever. Move to India or whatever. Do a yoga course. So I hear you there, Leanne. But it's been super interesting.
It's actually 75, the statistic, by the way. Divorce is just.
Oh, really? Is it 75% divorce?
Sure. That's quite high, huh?
That makes sense.
Marriage is tough.
Which is why I keep saying, I'm not going on holiday for you to make an improbable promise to somebody so you can get married. No, thank you. It's too big of a risk, too expensive. No way. If you're getting married an hour away from my house, I'm coming.
Yeah. Well, all right. That's the final word from
like I always said to my brother, who's almost a decade younger, when he started going through the phase of all of my friends are getting married, I'd say to him when he was leaving for the ceremony, enjoy the party. I'd never say enjoy the wedding because it was just a party.
Sure, all right. Listen, we've got a lot on the agenda this morning, so I just want to give you a quick overview of what we're going to be doing, because there's a fortune of stuff happening. So we've got Dr. Hanan and Caleb, who are going to be sorting out some of his what he called manic bipolar disorder. We'll talk a bit about that. So that's going to be interesting. We've got the five things you need to know coming up, obviously, as well. We got a little survey for Blind History, because we're going to be shortly launching season 6. And we want you to help us take part in that, figure out what we want. Ooh. Yeah, what we want to cover in the next season, because, I mean, it's incredible. We've done, I think, over 70 episodes already. And, you know, now we're getting to some really interesting people and we want your input. So we'll tell you about that later on. Also, Alan Ford will be joining us to tell us about what he's busy with, which is something called Hopetober. They're going around the country and doing some really cool stuff. So we'll find out about that. That's a project he's involved with at the moment. We got some expat email and Collectomania this morning with Matt.
Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah, so it's a busy day. I mean, you cannot afford to not be paying attention every step of the way. Which cat's that, Leanne? Leanne's just picked up one.
You wouldn't have met him before.
No.
His name is Llewellyn.
Oh, okay.
It's actually pronounced Llewellyn.
Llewellyn, I was going to say. Oh, that's very good.
And he's absolutely gorgeous. He found me.
Ginger cat with a white face and nice white paws. Very cute looking animal, that.
Yeah.
So was he a rescue?
He's an absolute beast. No, he just pitched up at my house.
Oh, man.
And I threw him over the wall initially and threw him back to where he came from, but then realized, Jimmy, he didn't come from there. He was just a stray. And he's near. And the thing is, he can't jump. I think he was hit by I figured it out. I think it's a garbage truck, because every time a garbage truck comes by, he panics and runs inside.
Oh, shit.
But he's got some sort of hip dysplasia thing.
Mm-hmm.
He looks normal, but he just can't jump up onto things. And there I was throwing him over walls.
Oh, shame.
But anyway, no, he's been with me for ages now. He's lovely, but very boisterous.
Somebody asked over the weekend, how many cats do you have to have to be a cat, like a weird cat lady or a weird cat guy? You only need one, right?
One.
It's just one.
Yeah, one.
So
one.
You know, really, the rest are just, they're almost, they're not going to add to your weirdness. They're just going to.
You have to still go through the same routines. You have the same mindset. And I've had 8 cats, so I can talk with experience.
Yes. Mm-mm. That's a one-way street. All right, let's look at some headlines quickly, because we're running out of time and Dr. Hanan's coming on in just a moment or two. Okay, so first things first, in the news this morning, Australian border is to reopen for the first time in years. This is terrifying for the people of Australia, because I don't know if you've seen what's been going on there, but they've been arresting people for any kind of lockdown, you know. Rules that have been broken. So if you're having a barbie in the back garden and that like one person is there who's not from your house and doesn't live in your house with you, but basically the cops bust in, certainly in Victoria and New South Wales, and they'll just take you away. They'll arrest you for that shit. So it's unbelievable. They got a picture of this dude who's been living in England and has not been back to Queensland in nearly 3 years, and said it's encouraging to see things moving in the right direction. So here's the deal. Australia will reopen its international border from November. Not yet. Only November. Can't take any chances. Giving long-awaited freedoms to vaccinated citizens and their relatives. But you heard that, right? Only vaccinated citizens and their relatives. So since March 2020, Australia has had some of the world's strictest border rules, even banning its own people from leaving the country. They've basically gone back to where they were in the 1800s, where there was one ship every 3 years that came to visit.
Oh, shame.
So you imagine the cabin fever that so many Australians who used to travel, and Australians are well known for being in every corner of the world. You know, if you go to a beach party in Bali, you'll bump into Australians. If you walk around London, you'll bump into Australians. You'll see them in South America. So clearly a lot of them have been, I don't know, either locked out or locked in for a long time. The policy has been praised, I don't know by whom, but it's been praised for helping to suppress COVID, but it has controversially separated families. It's time to give Australians their lives back, said the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. Thanks very much. I'm sure they're so grateful to you, oh great autocratic dictator. People would be eligible to travel when their state's vaccination rate hits 80%. So this is great.
So it's interesting. I'm watching a lot of the TV shows that I watch and series are Australian. And only now you're seeing the footage of when COVID first started. And the way the Australians reported it in the news compared to us was completely different. The headlines, because they flash back to real news items and real bulletins.
Yeah.
And people were going, Australia has changed today. It'll never be the same. Yeah. The Australia we know is dead. Oh, that's like the opening headline.
Let me tell you something. I think there are a lot of people who still think that we're going to get to a stage where there's zero COVID. And this is the problem, is that that's a completely unscientific, completely unreasonable, completely irrational way to think of things.
Then there would be zero stomach bugs, zero cold, zero flu. Like,
there is no such thing as perfect health for everybody for eternity. Otherwise, you'd be immortal. So I've got bad news for Australia, but some people are still going to be dying of COVID, even if you have 100% vaccination, even if you keep your borders closed, even if you don't allow anybody to leave their houses. There are still going to be people who die of COVID. You're going to have to learn to live with it. This idea of zero COVID is, it's childish, man. What are you, four? That you think that you can achieve that? Crikey.
Crikey, mate.
So get over yourselves, idiots. Anyway, the French Catholic Church. Listen to this.
Oh, two of my least favorite things said in a row there.
Let me tell you
something. French and Catholic.
Some 3,000 pedophiles have been operating inside the French Catholic Church since 1950. Now, I didn't even know there were 3,000 pedophiles in the world. But clearly, in just the Catholic Church in France, there are 3,000 of these pedophiles.
Are we going to pretend to be shocked? Are we doing a Cyril thing?
I have to tell you.
A Cyril.
I know.
The Catholic Church and destroying lives?
But I didn't know. 3,000. Tell me you're not surprised.
Come on.
That's a huge number. Bulelo. I mean, how many priests?
They've been at it for 3,000 years now. We can't start acting shocked now. I mean, you know the history of the Catholic Church and how we got here.
2,000.
Come on now.
Be reasonable here. Don't start with your hyperbole. I think there must only be 3,000 people in the Catholic Church in France. So are all of them pedophiles? Anyway.
I'm not even kidding. As soon as I hear you're a Catholic priest, I just my mind goes that way. And I'm not trying to be funny.
Listen to this. They've done a survey, right? And they've been trying to figure this out. AFP have reported this. So they released this report, and a commission uncovered between 2,900 and 3,200 pedophile priests or other members of the church, adding that it was a minimum estimate. A minimum. The commission's report is due to be released on Tuesday.
That is a shocking statistic.
Right.
It is.
That's pretty shocking.
And you know what's going to happen?
What? Nothing.
No, they're going to hide them in the Vatican like they are doing for thousands that are hiding there now. We mustn't pretend like we don't know this. Yeah. We know that's happening.
Yeah.
Like the Catholic Church gets away with way too much.
Can you imagine what their browser history looks like?
Yeah.
At the Vatican.
Yeah, they should be ashamed of themselves. Honestly, this is appalling. And this is just the French Catholic Church. Before we start dragging in everyone else, it's really very bad.
It's really sad because it's a religion that's really, I mean, most religions are steeped in tradition, but it really was one which, a religion which preserved the history of the the doctrine.
They've got to ask themselves what it is about being a Catholic priest that attracts pedophiles, because it's clearly a very popular job description for people who already have perversion in their system, right?
Well, you know, the thing is, just because the microscope is on the Catholic Church, doesn't mean that it's not going on in many other religions.
Yeah, no, they're all shit houses. But they're all shit houses. Like, all religious houses are shit houses.
Ask yourself why. That's all I'm saying. So, okay, South Africa will soon be removed from the UK's COVID red list. This is good news. So for anybody who is looking to travel, this is possibly a really happy, a positive sign. According to the Sunday Telegraph, the UK will soon allow quarantine-free travel from almost all countries, including South Africa.
And it's interesting it's taken this long, by the way, because, you know, our vaccines were shipped from England.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
So the current measures imposed by the British government permit entry to only British and Irish nationals arriving from high-risk countries, commonly referred to as red list countries, who are required to quarantine in government-managed hotels. I've got a couple of friends who've had to do that. Sunday paper reported the UK's red list of destinations would be cut from to nine from 54. The announcement expected to be made on Thursday this week, rather. So that's good news. I wonder who those nine countries are who they're not cutting from the red list. Those must be particularly bad places. Because if South Africa's okay and they're not, I want to know who they are. This is interesting. Just one last headline before we get to Hanan and Caleb. Municipal workers on their own if a pension fund contribution is not paid, says the finance minister. This finance minister, Enoch Godongwana, has been saying some interesting things lately. You know, we had Rob Hirsov on Thursday, and he was asked in a press conference on Friday, I think, the new Minister of Finance, what does he think of Rob Hirsov's comments, which have obviously made quite a splash? And he said, no, he supports him. He thinks he's right. There is a lot that's wrong and needs to be changed. So slowly but surely, and I don't know if it's just because elections are coming up, but you're hearing politicians saying things that sound quite sensible for a change instead of stupid and ridiculous. Let's give him some credit while we can, because it's always nice to hear government ministers saying something sensible. So this is his latest thing. He says, municipal workers whose pension fund contributions have not been paid to schemes will be left with no recourse. National Treasury did not have the power to take direct measures against a municipality that had not paid, according to Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana. He said in response to a parliamentary question from DA MP Samantha Jane Graham, he said Treasury would only act in Section 139 of the Constitution if the province had failed to exercise its oversight over a municipality. So in other words, if you work for a municipality that's just full of shit and isn't paying their bills, tough. The finance minister says he's not going to pick up the slack, and rightly so. Why should the rest of the country have to fund those workers who their own bosses in the municipality have not been looking after? And the bosses should obviously be fired. I mean, that's what should happen. Someone's got to, you know, the rubber hits the road, someone's got to be canned. Someone's got to be fired. And we don't see that enough in this country. Right, that's all we got time for in the headlines, but I know you're excited as I am to talk to Hanan about what's going on in the world. It's going to be okay, is what we call this. Dr. Hanan Bushkin, he's a renowned psychologist, head of the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic in Joburg. And if you have an issue or a conflict or something that you'd like to unpack, try and resolve, you want to join us live, then send us an email, please. contact@cliffcentral.com. So we've got Caleb on. He's got to get to work shortly, so we've got to talk to him and Hanan immediately. So let's go to them. Caleb, you and Dr. Hanan, give it a go. You introduce yourself to Dr. Hanan and then tell him what you wanted to talk about today.
Hi, Dr. Hanan.
Hello, Caleb.
I'm good. So I've struggled with manic bipolar for a while. You definitely know what that is. And maybe just to give context, you know, to everybody out there, is I think the first thing is there's a kind of terror involved in this kind of madness, you know. When you're on the high side, you'd know, Dr. Hanan, it's tremendous. The ideas and feelings are fast and they're frequent. They're like shooting stars, and you follow them until you find better and brighter ones. Shyness goes, you become this amazing, confident human being. There are interesting things that you find in uninteresting places. But then the ideas start to become a bit too fast, and there are far too many, overwhelming. Confusion replaces clarity. Memory goes. Humor and absorption on friends and faces are replaced by fear and frightened and uncontrollable concern. It will never end in that particular space when you get into that. And I think the biggest challenge is when you're on the mania side, you're not aware sometimes, you know. I remember before I handed over to you, Dr. Hanan, walking into my then superior's office. She was married with three kids, and her husband was at the time, I think, the former vice captain of the Namibia rugby team, and I was still living there. And I said to her, "You look absolutely smashing tonight. Would you like to come to my apartment and have a good..." And I had no idea. And 3 weeks later, I spent, I think, $2,400 on buying things I didn't need or I didn't want or I already have. and it's fun when you're on the high side. And people always said in the kind of job that I had at the time that, "Oh, you're creative. When you're running an event, it's always amazing. And there's a decreased need for sleep. But when then you go into the depression side, you don't wish it on your worst enemy. Even somebody who supports Manchester United, you wouldn't want them to go on that side, no matter how much you don't like the team, because it's terrible. You, even light will disturb you. You want to wear shades, close all the curtains and go under your blanket." Yeah. Just to give context on what that is. But I'm happy to say it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah. So, let me mention a couple of things to people, to the ones that are listening and don't know what bipolar disorder is. So bipolar disorder is actually, it's not a joke. It's the most, probably one of the most recognizable and certainly researched mental health conditions or disorders out there. It's been documented in 400 BC by Hippocrates, the Greek philosopher. It's where he noticed extreme highs and extreme lows in people. And people think it's funny, but it's actually such a debilitating disorder. So initially it was called manic depressive or manic depression, and then they changed it to bipolar. So the reason why they're called manic depression is because it's got the two parts, the mania part, which is the extreme high, which I'll describe in a second, and the depression side. Now they call it bipolar. The two poles, the manic pole and the depression pole. And the manic pole, there are a couple of categorization for bipolar, but the manic pole in what we call type 1 bipolar is extreme. So Caleb, what you describe is very, very synonymous with mania. People think mania is, it's, you know, people are confident and they're fun and they are confident and fun, but it's the extreme. I've had a manic patient that went out and maxed out his credit card at Hi-Fi Corporation because he thought he was going to open the world's largest electronics store. I had people max out their credit card at the casino because they had a divine intervention and believe that the roulette is going to land on black. I've had people throw away their kids' tuition on absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
And the problem with mania is that society rewards it. Yes. We've all had those friends that are super fun and super crazy and, "Oh my God, you're manic, but they're fun, and work rewards it too because you're super creative. And the truth is people that suffer from mania, which is the upper side of bipolar, don't even seek treatment because they feel confident. They feel that they can take over the world. They feel incredibly inspired. And the society rewards them for it because they're surrounded with this incredible energy. But the moment they become destructive, they start losing their jobs. They're a nightmare to their partners. They're a nightmare to their parents. They're a nightmare to their kids. They're a nightmare to law enforcement because they just don't care because they feel that they're above everything out there and above the law. That's when they seek help. The depressive side is really debilitating too. These are the people that don't want to get out of bed, don't want to engage with the world. They cover themselves with a duvet and don't get out. And in combination with the manic and the depressive episode, people actually dysfunction. It's not a way to engage the world because you have such extreme highs, which you feel on top of the world, and you have such extreme lows where you actually cannot function. But it's a dysfunctional high, and it's an incredibly dysfunctional low. And the way we manage these people, I'm sure you've had that too, Caleb, is with medication. So yeah, you go on medication to regulate the highs and to regulate the lows. That allows you to function a little bit. And yeah, manic people don't like the medication because it dampens, yeah.
Sorry, I can relate to that because I've had times when you don't like the medication because it mellows you out and you start to feel a little bit uninteresting. You start to feel a little bit less confident. And I went for 3 days here where I live in Kurdistan without taking my Epitec, for those who are familiar with lamotrigine, and I'm on 200. You would know, Dr. Hanan, what I mean by that. And I woke up twice in a row at 2 in the morning. This is Kurdistan. And if you know where I'm talking about in the world, signed out of this compound that we live in and went for a 4.5K run because I was listening to the show and I was getting encouraged by God Laws and Ben and Bulelo on their fitness journey. And I wanted to get back. And I didn't know until the guy I lived with came to me and said, dude, your key card swapped at 2:30 in the morning. Our curfew is midnight. Where were you and what were you doing? And there I was on the camera in my full gym clothes thinking that it's 5 in the morning. And fortunately, that didn't end badly, but it can get to places where, yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing. Like with when you experience mania, the ability to kind of assess consequence goes out the window. The ability to play out 4 steps ahead, which is an adult thing to do, goes out the window. So you just live in the here and now and you feel that there's no consequence to your action. A lot of people really get, there are no consequences, and a lot of people get really badly hurt. And not just physically hurt, but they lose their jobs, they lose their marriages, they lose terrible relationships when they hit those highs, for sure.
Is it correct to call Caleb a maniac? No, I mean, because that's where the word comes from, obviously. But you guys don't call, you psychologists and psychiatrists wouldn't call him a maniac. I mean, that's just a word we use now, because I think this has got to do with how people don't take mania as seriously as they take depression. We kind of understand a little more about depression than we do about mania, Dr. Hanan. I mean, certainly, you know, I'll say to someone, after they, you know, if they're behaving like really crazily at a party or they're doing insane stuff, oh, you maniac. But you wouldn't say to a depressed person, oh, you depro, you know, you understand what I mean?
No, it's so true. And it's much easier for society to recognize a depressed person because there's been so much, you know, media around it and awareness than it is a person who's in manic behavior.
Yeah, sure. And Leanne, the thing is that mania is way more socially accepted. I'm sure Gareth and Leanne, I mean, you've partied with people that go through mania and they're the best fun. They're absolutely the best fun. They don't want to leave the party. They throw jokes. They're incredibly creative. They want to just go on and on and on. They're incredibly fun. And you wouldn't leave a party with a manic person going, oh my God, that was boring. You go, oh my God, then I've got stories for days. So society is much more accepting of the manic episode than the depressive episode, because the depressive episode is not, it's not fun to be around a depressive. It's incredibly fun to be around a manic, for sure.
But Dr. Hanan, I think one of the reasons why it's also socially desirable when you're manic, it's because inherently as human beings, we're intrinsically selfish. So when you're around a manic person, it makes you feel good. The reason why we love nurses is because they care about us and not the other way around. And I remember a couple wouldn't get married if I wasn't flying down to Zimbabwe to be their master of ceremony at their wedding, because they had me do a speech once and they're like, dude, we're not getting married if you're not coming. And I think the biggest challenge for me has been on the relationship side, romantically, because you meet somebody and things are going well, and then you get to a point where you have to be open with them, because lying is not only telling lies, but it's also withholding the truth. And you have to say, look, I can go a little bit crazy. And the first thing they think about is, ooh, when you go crazy, I'm going to probably be in harm's way, but it's not the case. And to answer Gareth's question, I think the biggest way maybe to describe us is an unquiet mind. That's what Kay Redfield describes it as in her book, which she wrote, Unquiet Mind, A Memo for Moods and Madness. And I think that's a basic description where, like for me, basically, I either have to sleep at 11 and wake up at 5, or I sleep at 12 and wake up at 6. If I mess with that routine, I'm in trouble.
So can I ask a question here? Because I really don't know a lot about this. But is it possible to be manic, Dr. Hanan, in episodes, but not have the depressive parts of it? In other words, that you tend to have these manic episodes, but your down is kind of a zero rather than a minus.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Actually, that's called mania. Okay. So that's when you diagnose there's with mania, but it's not functional. And again, in these people, it's so difficult to find these people because they don't come for therapy. They're sent here by broken marriages and by broken bosses and by a broken relationship with kids. That's how they're sent to therapy.
I think I might be one of those people because I do have these manic episodes. No, seriously. I listening to Caleb's description, it was like, oh, holy shit. I know what's going on here.
And it's a challenge when you live alone, Gareth, because I only got to find out because I had people around me that cared and said, dude, I think there's something going on here. And
how do you know if it's a problem? How do you know if it's a problem though? Because we might all be sitting there just like you've discussed this before with us, Dr. Khanan. There are people who self-diagnose themselves as depressed, and that's not a good thing to do either. So similarly, you don't want to self-diagnose as manic. How do you know if it's a problem?
I mean, ask yourself, Gareth, when I look around my world, my career, my financial security, my relationship with family, friends, romantic relationship, and my health, do I like what I see? Am I living my optimal life? And if the answer is yes, I'm enjoying my career, financial security, family, friends, romantic, and my health, then you're doing pretty well. Okay. So that's your barometer. But if you go, something's broken, something's not working well, it doesn't mean that you're manic, but that means obviously there's some form of inefficiency that's going on in your world. It doesn't mean a mental disorder, but certainly something has to be tweaked. So your barometer is really the external world. And if you're not well enough to actually judge it, ask people that are closest to you. But with mania, what you maybe got to realize is that it's a horrible, horrible situation for the manic patient or the manic person, because suddenly they're the life of the party and they're expected to be the life of the party. Mm-hmm. They're invited everywhere, and the pressure on them to perform and keep on being on that high is incredibly stressful. Incredibly. I have people that are no longer manic, but they have to act manic because that's the only way that they're accepted by their peers and their groups. Because suddenly if they're not fun and spending thousands and hundreds of thousands of rands at the casino, they don't want to be part of, they're not invited anymore. If they're not drinking all the bottles at the bar, they're not invited anymore. If they don't stay at the party until 4 a.m, they're not invited anymore. And even though they, on a psychological, emotional level, feeling fine, they still have to act on that level just to be accepted in that group. Yeah. It's horrible.
It's terrible. And you start to find yourself being excluded. And I think what has got me going in the last couple of years is three things, basically. I think routine, if there's anybody out there who struggles with it, routine is absolutely important, and to stick to it. And secondly, it's this book, Malcolm Gladwell, where the title is David and Goliath, Underdogs, Misfits, and the Art of Battling Giants, because many of the misfits that we know in the world also struggle with manic bipolar. Winston Churchill, Paul Gascoigne, the former footballer, I think Amy Winehouse, Mariah Carey as well. And the idea there is to always find things that are productive within yourself that intrinsically get you going. So, for example, the rugby refereeing for me, the exercise that necessarily are not hinged on anybody else's approval. Because when you're not the life of the party anymore, and they all of a sudden find you horrible. Like, imagine I go on a first date and I'm cracking the best jokes and she's loving it and it's amazing. And then she meets me tomorrow and I can't even tie my own laces because I don't feel like doing anything.
Yeah.
She's not going to come on the next date. I've been told, like, dude, you're such a girl, you know, like you change. And that was before I had to go into an upper echelon of medication and get that going. So it's an interesting dynamic to have. But the highs are amazing if you're not regulating them. But just to end off, I've been told by my doctor that gout is a rich man's problem and bipolar is an intelligence people's curse. So it's not a bad thing at all.
No, it's horrible on their partners. On their partners, it's really, really heavy. I actually see more of the partners than the actual patients that suffer from bipolar, because they go through incredible turmoil. They're literally on a roller coaster that they didn't choose to be on. Imagine I put you on a roller coaster that you didn't choose to be on, and not a pleasant one, not a pretty one. That's what partners feel like when they go and they live with people that have mania and depression. It's a ugly, ugly, ugly. It's a very, very stressful roller coaster.
Yeah, I have to run.
All right, Caleb, thanks, man.
It's been good chatting to you guys. And thank you, Dr. Khanan. Hopefully,
later.
Talk to you. Thank you.
There we go.
Bye.
There's your free session. You're lucky we're not charging you for Dr. Hanan today. It's you know, this is interesting because I don't think we've had much of a discussion around mania before. I don't think many people have. I don't think it gets talked about nearly as much as depression does, as Leanne mentioned. But the things you described there, and even the advice that Caleb has got for us as someone who does suffer from this, I think is really, really interesting. And
It's tough.
Yeah.
I also think it's commendable that, you know, Caleb is so aware of his medication. And I don't want to talk about him now that he's gone, but to talk about the medication itself, I've been on it. I was actually incorrectly diagnosed with bipolar disease and disorder. And the medication he's referring to is what epileptics take. And the side effects are really incredible. So not only is this person dealing with their highs and lows and quelling the highs that they might enjoy, they're also dealing with the side effects of the medication. You know, in my case, it made me incredibly violent. So there was that to deal with.
Sure.
You know, it's such a hard thing to tackle. It really is.
Yeah. And by the way, just one more thing. Bipolar is not multiple personality disorder. People confuse the two. It's not having many different personalities, you know. So we throw the term around, oh, you're so bipolar, meaning that you have so many different personalities. It's not that at all.
Right. Good point. Because I think people also, you know, all these amateur psychologists running around diagnosing each other and other people and themselves. It's ridiculous.
Completely.
And just one more question from me on this, Dr. Hanan. Are the two polar opposites of this disorder, do they come in equal measures? Do they come in, in stints of days or weeks or hours? And are they always balanced out by each other or not?
So you get a couple of different diagnoses of bipolar. The three actually, but the two, the major ones we call bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. Bipolar 1 is the more extreme mania and the more extreme depression. And bipolar 2 is the what we call hypomania, which is the lesser of the mania and a depressive episode. So you can have extreme highs and not such highs. But to be honest, out of the hundreds of patients that I've seen with bipolar, they all come and with different highs and different lows. So it is very different. And the cycle can range from weeks to months. Hmm. So that can also be very, very depending on the individual.
I'm afraid that's all we got time for, guys. Thank you, Dr. Hanan. Always good to see you. We'll check in with you next week.
Nice to see you guys.
Very good. Yeah, and it's time for you to take a pee or whatever you do while we take a break here. Because we got so much to do in the next hour. You don't want to miss out on any of it. We'll see you on the other side. CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.